Hi, this is JP Salibi, a functional medicine physician in South Carolina, and I'm here today with Whole Body Health with me, Dr. Salibi. And today we're going to be focusing on hydration, both oral and IV hydration. And I do have an interview that we will view with Dr. Keith Berkowitz of the FLCCC, and we'll get started. Hydration. Here pictured we see an IV bag, but that's for IV hydration, which we will discuss, but we will also discuss oral hydration as it is more practical and less expensive and very important to our health. A little disclaimer here, this is not intended for diagnosis and treatment suggestions, but for informational purposes only. If you have an issue and feel that you are dehydrated, chronically dehydrated, please take this up with your healthcare practitioner. The learning objectives will be proper hydration, both with oral and IV intravenous, and how best to know your limits. And we will be hearing from a functional medicine clinician or integrative practitioner from New York, Dr. Keith Berkowitz, who himself is in affiliation with the FLCCC.
So let's dive into the main part of this episode, which is on hydration. And I know you spoke about it at the last medical conference in Texas, and I wanted the audience to hear more about it from your perspective and how you're utilizing some things in your clinic to help your patients.
And actually, we're starting to see now literature right backing this up. I think recently I've seen more and more articles published around this. I always think of, and I think sometimes we make a mistake in medicine, is we forget the basics. We go to like very advanced, high-powered treatments, but we don't do the most basic treatment. And I always think of when someone's sick, someone goes to the hospital, what's the first thing they get? When they go to the hospital, they get intravenous hydration. And again, that's the most basic step. What's interesting about COVID, and I think where some of this problem started, it's really the first disease that I know of in my lifetime where people were so sick, yet forced to be treated at home, right? So they didn't have that option. So they didn't get the normal standard treatment. You know, people, they didn't have someone put an IV into their arm and given them, you know, normal saline if you see an internist, or lactated Ringers if you see a surgeon. And that was the most basic. When your body is under stress, one thing that does happen, you know, first, we've always learned, is dehydration can set in. And dehydration really leads to so many other complications. One of my other favorite topics, which is blood sugar. When individuals come in, for example, with very high blood sugars, say a blood sugar 500, 600, the first treatment is also hydration, because the cells won't uptake glucose and won't be able to bring down that glucose level in the blood without being hydrated. They don't work. Insulin doesn't even work in that case. So we learned that's one, and also for the body to relax, to be calm. And I think that I'd like to talk about that more, because that's a big part of treating long-haul COVID and long vax or vaccine injury, is that the nervous system, when it's an overactive state, one of the best ways to kind of calm it down is actually by intravenous fluids. Also, when you increase volume, it allows increasing resources, right? When you give volume, and the reason we like normal saline as opposed to drinking water, we know the sodium actually helps bring more water intravascularly. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think when we drink, what is it, about 10% stays intravascular? I don't remember the exact number. It's
I don't know
pretty
the
low.
exact number. Yeah.
And when we give it intravenously, it's all intravascular.
All there.
It's all within
Yes.
the vessels. So you're really getting a tremendously greater response and a benefit from that. And I think we've kind of unfortunately moved away from using that as one of the most important things in armamentarium and first steps, actually.
So just before we close out this session, just a little bit about the hydration again. So what are you telling your folks outside of your office when they don't have access to IV? Well, how to hydrate orally, and what you're asking them to do as far as add to any water, and let's talk about what your main protocol is for IV hydration. I mean, how do you set it up? How frequent? What volume? That kind of stuff.
So I'll take a step back and talk a little bit more. There is some lab tests that give us a clue, right? So people use the term POTS a lot of times, which is postural orthostatic hypotension, where their blood pressure drops or their pulse goes up from when they're lying to standing. So it's interesting, hydration in that aspect increases what we call endothelial function. So it actually helps the blood vessels contract better from that action. And actually, in the vax-injured, there's actually two other labs I see that are off. I don't know if you've seen this. I measure antidiuretic hormone, which is a hormone that works on the kidney and telling the kidney, hey, to conserve fluid. That often is very low when it should be high. And when I look at their urine, I suspect in someone who's dehydrated to see a very high specific gravity. And a lot of times they don't. So they're actually unable to concentrate their urine properly. So their body's unable to hold on to fluids. And what's interesting, and we're seeing, you see a lot of people with POTS, I guess, you know, with the blood pressure.
Right.
That a lot of that may also be neurological. And when we tie in, we could talk a little about GABA and the effect of serotonin on that as well. But for those people, I'll actually start out with 1 liter to 2 liters. And I actually do a neat trick. I actually sometimes go until they urinate. So when someone has to have the urge to urinate, that's actually the body gets to euvolemic. I mean, in some cases, we could be there for a week. But typically, I'll do, depending on age, in an older person, you want to give less fluid because their body can't handle that salt load as well. And the reason why fluid, again, it's sodium chloride we're giving. So it's between 1,000 to 2,000, depending on, you know, how sick they are, how dehydrated they are, and age. Again, being more careful as they get older, I'll do that. And typically, I would do it once a week or twice a week with a goal of not needing it at some other point. An alternative to that is actually you can have them use and add their own salt to water, using something like Himalayan salt or Celtic salt, and add that to water. And again, obviously, you want to be careful with someone with high blood pressure, you know, or cardiac problems. But in other people, and I actually, my diabetics, they do really well with this, that increased sodium in the water allows more of that fluid to stay within intravascular. And actually, what we'll see is their blood pressure will start to stabilize, their pulse will come down. And in a lot of cases, their glucose will also be less volatile and less variable.
I found some liquid IVs. They're a combination of salts, kind of like a Gatorade with all its sugar. It's helpful. And I never tell my patients to put a whole packet in 8 ounces or 12 ounces of water. I think it's too much. I tell them to use about a half a pack.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about that is the sugar actually acts as a diuretic. So you lose some of the value, unfortunately.
Yeah. So these packets don't have any added sugar.
Okay.
Like usually very, very low carbohydrate or something like 2 to 5 grams per packet. And if you're using half, that's a really low load of sugar. But also, do you use NT-proBNP or galactin 3? I sometimes do that when there's risk of heart failure. I don't want to fluid overload somebody. So sometimes I'll look at a beta natriuretic peptide or a proBNP, which is even a better indicator of their risk for fluid overload. And then galactin 3 is a marker of cardiac muscle stiffness, if you will, fibrosis. And that can be a problem with the vaccine, with folks having a fibrotic injury, which then can lead to rhythm disturbances and sudden death.
And the other aspect, if you want to get someone to stabilize their blood sugar, because another source of loss of fluid is an unstable blood sugar, whether it's high or low, we'll both have that same effect as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can get chronically dehydrated if your sugars are up, or, you know, if you're running an A1C of 8 or 10%, you're constantly peeing and chronically dehydrated. So that's good. So you do it based on their output, their urine output. And then how often, I guess it would depend on the patient and how severely dry they are, how often you bring them in.
It could be once a week. What's interesting about it, and I don't know if you've seen this a lot of patients, I have several patients that are nervous system so hyperactive. And when they're so hyperactive, they don't tolerate very many treatments. Even things like we use that low-dose naltrexone, or some people use an ivermectin or other supplements. And actually what's interesting, the hydration also has an effect on calming their nervous system down. And what's interesting is by calming that down and, you know, bringing them to where I call it a more homeostatic state, right? So their body's not in a flight or fight response as much when they're well hydrated. That also is very helpful. And it could be from once a week. Sometimes I have people come once a month, but over time I find as they correct that, they don't need that as much in the long term.
Right. Very good. Excellent. So that kind of wraps this up for hydration.
So I want to thank Keith for his interview on this topic. And I want to wrap it up with a discussion of salts. What are salts? Well, we do want to add some kind of salt or minerals or electrolytes to our water. If we drink too much plain water, especially distilled water or heavily filtered water, we can get water intoxication. That's where we dilute out all of our natural electrolytes, and we can have problems with low sodium, low potassium, low magnesium. So by adding some salts to your water, like a pinch of, in this case, Himalayan salt or sea salt, we can add back in electrolytes to keep the water we take in a little bit better balance. We do definitely want to avoid water intoxication with just plain old H2O. We need electrolytes just as much as we need water when we hydrate. IV is another important way to hydrate, but it again requires a clinic where venous access is obtained and then a solution of normal saline or lactated ringers is administered through the IV at different volumes depending on how much you will need and how dehydrated you are. One of the easiest ways to measure this is when you get up and have to use the restroom. When you micturate or have to urinate, that usually means you've had adequate amounts of IV hydration. We do not want to put you in fluid overload. An alternative to that is something called liquid IV. It comes in different brand names and different forms, but essentially it's a packet of electrolytes that you would add to water. Here's an example of one liquid IV brand name that I tell my folks only use half a packet for every 12 ounces of water. It's low in sugar and high in electrolytes. How often for the very sick? Well, as Keith discussed, maybe weekly or in the very beginning, twice a week, every 3 days or so for IV hydration. Oral hydration can be managed under the direction of a clinician at home. Obviously, the more sick you are, the more your hydration requirements become. And this wraps up another episode of Whole Body Health with me, Dr. Salibi. This episode was on hydration. Stay tuned for some more interesting topics.